Right, good afternoon. I don't know whether Dr. Betten emailed you or not. He has to travel for unexpected reasons this week, and he asked me to give the class instead. And he asked me to talk about basic representation theory, essentially explaining what characters are. So what I have copied you there are the first few pages from a book by Serre, Linear Representations of Finite Groups. This was published in the Springer Graduate Text Series. This URL has actually the book on there. If a university as prestigious as Harvard has it on their web pages, I'm sure they got permission to put it there in general, so we don't have to worry about that. Right. So some of it, what I'll be talking about, might be repetition of things you've seen in other courses. If I'm vice versa, if you feel I'm going too quickly or I'm assuming something you haven't seen, please interrupt me. So what we will be talking about are basically homomorphisms from finite groups. Don't need to be finite, though. Some of the things can only be proven in the finite case into a group of matrices. So what we have is we have a vector space. I should say. So this text, this is actually a rather brief summary of representation theory, which was written originally for chemists. Chemists at a pretty good French university, so it's written perfectly. It's just this is in some ways short form. It tries to get to the definition of characters very quickly. There is a lot of other stuff which one could do more general, but we don't need this. So we have V is a vector space over, and he picks it over the complex numbers. Actually, we don't really need much of the complex numbers. It's just if you come from the natural sciences, you basically know the real numbers and the complex numbers. And, the properties we're using is it's a field in characteristic zero. We don't need this for everything, but there is one crucial property which we'll be using later where characteristic zero comes in, but you can build the whole theory in other characteristics. And we're using that it is algebraically closed. Actually, again, we wouldn't really need this. It would be sufficient that we have enough roots of unity in there. But basically, we can just say if a matrix can be diagonalized, it can be diagonalized over the field. So it's just a convenience property, so we don't ever have to go to algebraic extensions or so. And again, one can do this in other more specialized situations, and much of the theory carries through. GL of V, the general linear group of V, is the group of vector space homomorphisms. Isomorphisms, of course. Otherwise, it's not a group. It's not an isomorphism from V to V. And we can associate to such a map matrix. So if A is in GLV and we have E1 up to EN is a basis, so I say vector space, so I probably should also say finite dimensional. If we have a basis, we can look at the image under A of some basis vector EJ,
and that is the sum over I, A, I, J, E, I. We can take the image, we can decompose it in basis vectors because the basis spans, and we get numbers, and these numbers associate a matrix. So A, I, J is the matrix. Associated to this linear map A. And that is basically stuff you know from linear algebra. Here I'm writing, probably because Sarah, he is really more a number theorist, he is acting on the left and working with column vectors, that's notation if you prefer row vectors, you would switch the indices I and J and would write the map on the right. And obviously we need that the determinant of this matrix is not zero, is not equal to zero, that is equivalent to this map is not just a linear map but is an isomorphism. Okay. So we have G is a finite group. I'll write the product just as concatenation of elements. A linear representation of G is a group homomorphism gives it a name rho for representation from G to GLV for some vector space V. So that's a linear representation. What does it mean, group homomorphism? This means that rho of ST is equal to rho S and then rho T. And now I just have to be slightly careful. If ST means applying first T, then S, because he's acting from the left, then this is a map and this is just... Does he want to do it this? Yes, he wants to do it this way around. And that would be the map, so this is really the circle product, the concatenation of maps first. Apply T, then apply S, and we want to act on the left. Don't worry about the right-left ordering. Basically, the notation in most cases will actually be about maps, and then this becomes irrelevant. So let's take this as the obvious product for homomorphisms. Okay, what else do we say? So the representation is this homomorphism. If the dimension of V, we call the degree of the representation. And because these are linear maps, we could write matrices for these once we choose a basis. So we would have, if RS is the matrix for rho of S with respect to a chosen basis, we have that RST is R of S. Times R T. So that's just the same statement, just here about abstract linear maps, here about matrices. Okay. Yeah, and we want, so what we want is really just a set of matrices, if we, for the elements of G, such that the matrices multiply in the same way as the group elements multiply. Yeah?
What does that mean by RS is the matrix for row
of S? Okay, row of S is a linear map from V to V, right? So with respect to this basis, I can write down a matrix for it in using this rule. And these matrices I take. And actually, whenever you do any kind of example, you probably will have chosen a basis for your vector space. And you will be working with matrices. It's just abstractly, you could talk about linear transformations. And some of the things come out slightly slicker if we talk about linear transformation instead of talking about matrices. Basically, if one talks about matrices, some things have to be proven by working with indices, and with linear transformations one can move a little bit around this. Okay. Yeah, so for, let me probably do an example first before going on. An example, let's say G is the symmetric group S3. Or do I? No, let me not take S3. Let me take the dihedral group of order 6, which is the same group, but I'm looking at it slightly differently. That's the symmetries of a triangle, right? So I have a triangle here, and, well, now these are operations in two-dimensional space, actually orthogonal transformations, which map the triangle to the triangle. So we can write down matrices. So for example, we could say if we do, well, we would have, for example, one of the generators would be the flip along the horizontal axis. And I'm choosing, yeah, I also need, if I want to write down matrices, I need to choose a basis, and my basis is the obvious basis for writing it on the board. So what would this do? This would be the matrix minus 1, 0, 0, 1, right? The x-axis is mapped negative, and the y-axis stays the same if I'm flipping triangle like this. Or I could take a 120 degree rotation, and then I would get a rotation matrix cosine 120 degree, sine 120 degree, minus sine 120 degree, cosine 120 degree. And I did not say which way around I rotate, so I don't need to remember where the minus sign is. And yeah, basically that depends again whether you're for a row or column vector. Well, where does it have to be? 120 degrees is more than 90 degrees, so the x-axis, the x-vector, if I rotate 120 degrees in that direction, the first basis vector has to move here. So I need to have, okay, so 120 degrees, sine looks like this with 90 degrees being. Here, so the sign would be still positive, and I want the X, and I want the Y part to be positive. No, sorry, then I need to move the minus sign there, right? I'm moving the X, the first column, if I'm acting on column vectors, is the image of the first basis vector. The first basis vector is unit vector in X direction. If I'm rotating 120 degrees, the X direction is negative, but the sign is still positive. So, the X direction is negative and the sign is positive, yeah. So, no, this, yeah, that's correct.
So you're thinking of your columns are what's happening to X and those are what's happening to Y?
No. The column one, I'm acting on column vectors. So X is the vector one, the unit vector in direction X is the vector 1, 0. The unit vector in direction Y is the vector 0, 1. And I'm writing a linear transformation for an image, the matrix for a linear transformation has as columns simply the images of the basis vectors expressed in the basis. So the first basis vector is this vector. Geometrically, it is mapped to this vector. So I need to express this vector in my basis, where the X. Sorry, no, no, not so. What? No, I it had. Sorry, I got mixed up with X and Y. So what happens with the X? The X part is negative, right? And the Y part is positive. So the X part, how does the cosine look? The cosine looks like this, right? So at 120 degrees here, the cosine is negative. Cosine 120 degrees will be negative. So this will be negative. And if I have it, yes, if I have it positive here, that will be still positive because the sine is positive. What happens with the second basis vector, with the vector 0? One, that is this vector, rotating 120 degrees, it becomes this vector here, right? So this vector, which points in that direction, has negative X part and negative Y part. Well, for 120 degrees, the sine of 120 degrees is positive, the cosine of 120 degrees is negative, so this is negative, so I need to have a minus sign here to make it negative. Okay, now it's fine. Sorry, this was. Did that answer your question? Okay. Right, and now one can also write down. One can write down matrices for the other group elements. The other reflections get a bit more messy because there I don't get so nice a diagonal matrix. Yeah.
So you use the fact that this group is sort of comes out of the symmetries of a triangle in order to find
I found one representation, yes.
In general, then, would you say it's not this trivial to find?
Oh, in general, it's hard to find the representations, okay. Yes. And that is one of them. There are several.
Okay.
There are others. And, well, I can actually, in this case, I can give you two other ones, and they are not that particularly interesting. Well, one is, I can, well, let's give names to these group elements, just so I don't need to draw these awkward pictures all the time. Let's say this element is the element little a, and this element is the element little b, right? So I could have another representation where I'm mapping A to the matrix, the 1x1 matrix with the 1, and I'm mapping B also to the 1x1 matrix with 1. I'm mapping everything to the 1x1 matrix with entry 1.
That is a homomorphism. It's not a very interesting one, and that I can do that with every group, and that is called the trivial representation. Okay. Let's do another one. I could take not just these matrices, but I could take the determinant of the matrix and put the determinant into one by one matrix. Right? Determinant behaves nicely with multiplication, so that would begin be a representation. So I could have rho of A, what's the determinant of this matrix? That's minus 1 times 1, which is minus 1. What's the determinant of this matrix? That's cosine square plus sine square, that is 1. So I'm mapping this to 1. That is also a representation. That's the natural geometry and then the determinant. Geometry and then the determinant. Or you could say it's minus 1 if the orientation is flipped and plus 1 if the orientation stays the same. If you would color your triangle red and blue in front and back, whether the color stays the same or not. Okay. Do another one, and you might have seen, or it's not very hard to see, that D6 is isomorphic to S3, to the symmetric group. Namely, what I can do is I can put labels on my corners, and for every transformation I can write down a permutation, and you easily see that you get all possible permutations of three letters. So, what I could do is, I could, and that is called the permutation representation. I have G, a group G, which acts on a set omega, which consists of points 1 up to, well, n was the dimension, I called the dimension, so let's say the set consists of points 1 to k. I take a k-dimensional vector space, with basis E1 up to EK, and now I simply want that rho of some group element G, okay, G is a group element, rho of G is a linear transformation, right? And I'm applying this linear transformation to a basis vector, EI. What shall this be? This shall be the basis vector with the index number I, well, let's be acting on the left, G of I. So I'm permuting the basis vectors exactly in the same way as I'm permuting the points of the set. So what would this be in this example? Well, so this flip would be the permutation which fixes the point 1 and swaps the points 2 and 3, right? So what would be the matrix? I want to map the first basis vector to itself, the second basis vector to the third, and the third basis vector to the second. So I would get this matrix. And I can
what would happen under a 120 degree rotation. If I'm rotating this way, then 1 is mapped to 3, 3 is mapped to 2, 2 is mapped to 1. Right? So I would have 1 is mapped to 3, 3 is mapped, 2 is mapped to 1, and 3 is mapped to 2. And I get this matrix. Okay. So this would be another representation. So in general, there are many representations. And what we want to do is basically we want to get an overview over the representations. Okay. The first thing which is typically happening when one looks at or generally if you look at classifications, is often there is some kind of equivalence, and one wants to classify up to equivalence. And in our case, equivalence could be to say, well, if someone else chooses a different basis, then we would get different matrices, but in some way it's still the same representation. Or if you prefer talking not about matrices but about linear maps, you could say, I want that if the representations basically are the same unless I have linear map between the vector spaces, then I consider them the same. So don't worry, I will not go to the very end. You don't need to crank your throat to the end point. It's just I want to keep the examples there because I will add to them. So let me just put this definition here. If rho and rho prime from a group G to some vector space are two. No, sorry, what do I want to do? I want to allow two different vector spaces. So I have rho goes from G to the general linear group over some vector space V, and I have rho prime, which goes from G to the general linear group of some vector space V prime. If they are both representations, and these vector spaces are isomorphic, and tau from V to V prime is a vector space isomorphism, of vector spaces, then we say that rho, well, then if I have the property if I take tau rho of S, that is the same as rho prime of S tau for all elements S in the group. Okay, what do I mean by this? These are linear transformations. So I could take an element, if I take an element of the vector space V, this means first apply tau, so go to the vector space V prime, then apply the linear transformation, which is via the representation rho prime associated to the element S. Or I could say first apply the linear transformation via rho associated to the element S, and then apply tau to go to the linear, with a linear isomorphism to the other vector space. Or if you prefer, then it's not looking that symmetric, but then it might be easier to see. If I have that rho prime of S would be, I'm just applying tau inverse there, would be tau times rho of S and then tau inverse. So instead of applying rho prime, I could say apply tau inverse. So go from the vector space V prime to the vector space V, then apply the representation, and then apply tau. And that's the same formula as for base change. It's you can consider an invertible matrix either as either as matrix for a linear transformation or as matrix for a base change, and then in some way you can interpret this formula as both ways, either base change formula or linear transformation, linear isomorphism formula. So, I wanted to define something. So these representations are called similar if there exists such a map tau such that this identity holds. So what this is just saying is I consider representations the same or equivalent if one would come from the other under base change. So for example, I could have chosen that my first basis vector is the y direction, my second basis vector is the x direction. Then I wouldn't have this matrix, but I would have the minus one here. And here I would have to swap rows and columns, and then I think the minus sign would have ended up here. Then, so I end up, it's formally a different representation, but I end up, in some way it is the same, because it just depends on isomorphisms between these vector spaces. So what we want to do is we want to classify representations typically only up to this similarity of representations. Okay. Well, I want to give you another example of a representation. Some way that is even a series of examples. So this is another example. I could have row of A is the representation, let's say, to a 3x3:1 matrix, and row of B is also a 3x3 identity matrix. I could do that. That's a representation also. It's not really that different than the representation where I just mapped to the identity matrix. And there is nothing special about 3. I could take a 10x10 matrix. So I can write representations in any dimension I want. There are infinitely many of them. So if I want a classification, I probably can't classify them all that way. But these representations really aren't particularly interesting. They're just put together from existing representations, right? Or I could put other representations together. I could put the geometric representation, the two-dimensional one, and the sign together. So I could have row of A is the matrix. Okay, here I have a block where I put the sign, the minus one, and then I put the two-dimensional representation. And I could have that B, I do the same thing there. I take the 1x1 block for this representation, and in the bottom right, the 2x2 block for the other representation. So I have cosine. Right? And that would also be a representation. It's just existing representations put together. Okay. So, since there are infinitely many, I can't classify it. I will not end up with a nice classification of all representations. But what I want to do is basically look at representations which are not put together in this way. And if I do a base change, so if I change the bases simultaneously here, I might not see it immediately that I have this form. So I want to classify representations where, regardless what base change I'm doing, I can never bring them into such a form. Okay, and that's the next thing I want to define. So, let's say rho goes from G to GL, V is a linear representation, and often people don't write the word linear there. When they talk about representations, they just mean a linear representation. Right, and let's suppose we have a subspace, W is a subspace of V. Okay. Well, if I have a subspace, it could happen that the subspace is kept, is mapped to itself by all linear transformations associated to elements of G. So, if rho of S, that's a linear transformation of some element W, lies again in W for all little w in big W. So, what I want is, I have a subspace, and anything in this subspace is mapped again in that subspace. What does this correspond to? That basically corresponds to a situation like this one here, right? That I have simultaneous block structure. Anything spent by the second and third basis vector is mapped to a linear combination of the second and the third basis vector. Right? Then I call this a sub-representation. Okay, so then W, if this holds, then W is a sub representation of V. Okay, that's abstractly talking about linear transformations. What does this mean in the matrix world? Okay, in the matrix world, this is just saying I can choose a basis for the subspace and extend it to a basis of V. Right? So choose a basis E1 up to E, well, let's say L, oh no, L is not a good letter, EM of W, and I extend it to a basis E1 up to EK of V. I can always do this. If I have a subspace that's basically one of the theorems in linear algebra one proves in the context of proving the existence of dimension, that dimension is a unique property. There is a theorem you've proven which says if you have a subspace, you can always extend a basis for a subspace to a basis of the whole space. Okay, what does this mean if we have matrices? So, then I have that row of any element S. Okay. My first M basis vectors are basis vectors which are the basis vectors of the subspace W, right? at the subspace W, I want to be invariant under this linear transformation. Yeah, so equal is up to the identification of matrices with linear transformations. So the image of the first basis vector under this linear transformation must be a linear combination of the first m basis vectors, right? Because otherwise it wouldn't lie in W, it wouldn't go get out of W. So I have something here, so these are the first m rows, but I have zeros down here. And the same holds for the other, for all of the first m basis vectors. So I have some block here, I have an m cross m block here, and I have zero down here, right? And I have something else here. So, that's in matrix world if I have a sub-representation. And the sub-representation, I can now also look at what would this do only on W, and that would give me these smaller matrices, this block up in the left corner. So, I have the sub-representation, and Serre calls this rho W. This is only the action only on W, and then this thing up here is actually not some random matrix, but then this thing here would be rho down rho W of S. Okay. So that's a sub-representation, and then he must define, no, he doesn't define irreducible. It's the obvious definition. Oh, he has a whole section on irreducibles. Okay. Definition, rho is irreducible if there is no proper sub-representation. Okay. Why do I say proper sub-representation? Well, I can always find two subspaces for which this works. The trivial subspace, the zero-dimensional subspace, and the whole space. They are technically sub-representations, but they're not very interesting to look at in terms of reduction. So if only these exist, if nothing else exists, then we call the representation irreducible. Or in the matrix world, if I can't do a base change, then I get matrices which have a nice zero block down here. Regardless how I'm choosing, changing the basis. Okay. And basically the classification one wants to get is a classification of irreducible representations. The reason for doing so is that one can show, I don't know whether we'll be showing this, but that there, if the group is finite, there are just finitely many irreducible representations up to this similarity. If you just look at arbitrary representations, I've shown you a scheme, just map the group, every group element to an identity matrix, but you can choose the dimension in which you want. You can write down arbitrarily many representations, but there are just finitely many irreducible representations. But we haven't seen why there are just finitely many. Okay. Probably it's worth to, in particular since I anyhow just have 5 minutes left, to look at this in an example. So, what I will do is let's go back to this three-dimensional permutation representation. So where rho of A was the matrix 1, was this matrix, and rho of B was 0, 0, 1 went to 3, 3 went to 2, 0, 0. Right? That was the representation we had there. Can I find a sub-representation? Can I find a subspace which is invariant under these two matrices? Well, probably if I'm asking this way and I'm saying this is an example for it, the answer is yes. So, what I can do is, actually I can find two. Let W1 be the subspace spent by the vector 1, 1, 1. Right? Since these matrices act by permuting the entries of the vector, this vector will be mapped to itself. This is a common eigenvector of both matrices. Okay. So that would be a subrepresentation. There is another subrepresentation, namely, if I look at the vectors whose entries sum up to zero. Okay, that is not immediately obvious that this will work. Right? But if I'm telling you, I'm taking these vectors, vectors whose entries sum up to zero, then if I'm permuting the entries, they again sum up to zero. Right? So that is also invariant. And one can see that is spent by the vector 1 minus 1, 0, and the vector 1, 0, minus 1. Okay, so these are two sub-representations. Okay. And it happens that W1 and W2 intersect trivially. That just intersects the zero vector, right? If I take the vectors with the same entry in every component, whose entries sum up to zero, that's just the zero vector. And that's where I'm using characteristic zero, for example. That would not be true if I'm going to finite fields or fields of finite characteristic. Right. So now I'm choosing a new basis. I'm choosing a new basis where my first basis vector shall be the vector 1, 1, 1. My second basis vector shall be the vector 1, minus 1, 0. And my third basis vector shall be the vector 1, 0, minus 1. Right? Because these spaces intersect trivially, we know this together must span the whole space. Then, in this new basis, I can write a new representation, a similar representation rho prime with respect to this new basis. Okay, so how does this new representation look like? Oh, this is not a board for colored chalk. Right. What will it do with A? Now I just need to take the images of these basis vectors and express the images again in these spaces, right? That's how I write. So I need to take the image of this basis vector under permuting entries. This is permuting entries 2 and 3, and this is the permuting the entries 1, 2, 3 cyclic. Right? So this vector is mapped, if I permute the entries, is mapped to itself. Right? So the first basis vector is mapped to itself, so I have 1, 0, 0 here. Okay. What happens with the second basis vector?
A permutes the entries 2 and 3 in component 2 and 3, right? So I'm mapping this vector, permuting components 2 and 3, this vector is mapped to this vector, and this vector is mapped to this vector, right? So I get here 0, 0, 1, and 0, 1, 0. Okay? What happens with B? So B maps the first entry, this maps the first component into the third, the entry in the second component in the first, and the entry in the third component in the second, right? That was this permutation. So what happens about this vector again is mapped to itself. So I get 1, 0, 0 here. What happened with the second basis vector? So the entry in the first component, this under B, the entry in the first component is mapped in the third. The entry in the second component is mapped in the first. Right? That would be this vector here. Okay. So that is minus E3. Right? So the second basis vector is mapped to minus E3, so I get 0, 0, minus 1 here. So this is the image in the standard basis. I'm taking the second basis vector, write it in the standard basis. My action is permuting, write the vector in the standard basis, permute the entries. I'm permuting the entries. And now I'm looking, how do I decompose this in my new basis? And it happens to be the negative of the third basis vector. So this is just saying the negative of the third basis vector. And I'm doing it that way because I could instead have, I could have written these three vectors as columns in a matrix and inverted the matrix and calculated base change and done base change on both. But that is more arithmetic. That's why I'm arguing with the images there. That's just because I'm not very good at doing matrix multiplication on the board, inverting matrices on the board. Okay, what happens with a third basis vector? Okay, so the third basis vector under B, again, permuting the components. The entry in the first component goes in the third. The entry in the second component goes in the first. The entry in the third component goes in the second. I get this vector here, 0, minus 1, 1 from this point, right? Okay, now how do I decompose this in this basis? That is E2 minus E3. Okay. So I get E2 minus E3, and I get this matrix. Okay. So what has actually happened here is not only do I have two sub-representations, but because the spaces intersect trivially, I actually have seen I can change my matrix and I can change it to a nice form that I have only blocks along the diagonal, that my representation is just put together in this boring way from smaller representations. And what are the smaller representations? Well, this one is the trivial one, which we've seen before, and this one can see is equivalent to the natural two-dimensional one with a triangle. Basically, what you just need to do is you need to choose a different coordinate system. You need to choose a coordinate system where your basis vectors are 120 degrees. At 120 degree angle. Then, if you choose, or do you choose them this way? then you get this 2x2 representation would be equivalent to this two-dimensional one we had before. So this three-dimensional representation is not really new. It is simply put together from these smaller representations. And what one can show now, but I'll do that, well, not now, but on Wednesday, is in characteristic zero, that will always work. As soon as we have a sub-representation, not only do we have zeros here, but we can choose a basis that we also have zeros here. And the representation is simply put along the diagonal with blocks like this. Okay, but that's not for today. Thank you very much, and I'll see you on Wednesday.